Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. We certainly want to celebrate Easter. Certainly wish everyone a very happy Easter, very appropriate to maybe tell the story of Easter and some of the traditions that go along with it. Easter is a time of springtime festivals. In Christian countries, Easter is celebrated as the religious holiday commemorating the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But the celebrations of Easter have many customs and legends that are pagan in origin and have nothing to do with Christianity. Scholars, accepting the derivation proposed by the 8th century English scholar St. Bede, believe the name Easter is thought to come from the Scandinavian goddesses of mythology, signifying spring and fertility, whose festival was celebrated on the day of the vernal equinox. Traditions associated with the festival survive in the Easter rabbit, a symbol of fertility, and in colored Easter eggs, originally painted with bright colors to represent the sunlight of spring and used in Easter egg rolling contests or given as gifts. The Christian celebration of Easter embodies a number of converging traditions with emphasis on the relation of Easter to the Jewish festival of Passover. Passover is an important feast in the Jewish calendar, which is celebrated for 8 days and commemorates the flight and freedom of the Israelites from slavery in Egypt. The early Christians, many of whom were of Jewish origin, were brought up in the Hebrew tradition and regarded Easter as a new feature of the Passover festival. And Easter is at the end of the Lenten season, which covers a 46-day period that begins on Ash Wednesday and ends with Easter. The Lenten season itself comprises 40 days, as the 6 Sundays in Lent are not actually a part of Lent. Sundays are considered a commemoration of Easter Sunday and have always been excluded from the Lenten fast. The Lenten season is a period of penitence and preparation for the highest festival of the church year, which is Easter. Holy Week, the last week of Lent, begins its observance with Palm Sunday, last Sunday. Palm Sunday takes its name from Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, where the crowds laid palms at his feet. Holy Thursday commemorates the Last Supper, which is held the evening before the crucifixion. Friday in Holy Week is the anniversary of the crucifixion, the day that Christ was crucified and died on the cross. Holy Week and the Lenten season end with Easter Sunday, the day of resurrection of Jesus Christ, which is today, and happy Easter to everyone. And Lent is over, so all the things that you gave up for Lent, and Sundays included, you can start again, or maybe you continue. I remember a couple of years ago, I gave up, I used to like Coke. Gosh, I like Coke a lot. Not Pepsi, not RC, Coke. Full-bodied Coke. And about 3 years ago, I gave it up for Lent. And I've never gone back. I haven't had a Coke in 3 years. And gosh, I crave it every once in a while. But I miss it. So, well, I gave up potato chips here for Lent and French fries and candy and all that stuff. And I might continue that. I hate to say I've never heard of French fry or not a potato chip, but never knows. Well, the Easter Bunny, of course, the Easter Bunny for all the kids. The Easter Bunny has its origin in pre-Christian fertility lore. The hare and the rabbit were the most fertile animals known, and they served as symbols of the new life during the spring season. The bunny, as a symbol, seems to have its origins in Germany, where it was first mentioned in German writings in the 1500s. The first edible Easter bunnies were made in Germany during the early 1800s and were made of pastry and sugar. Easter Bunny was introduced to American folklore by the German settlers who arrived in the Pennsylvania Dutch country during the 1700s. The use of elaborate Easter baskets would come later as the tradition of the Easter Bunny spread throughout the country. Kenneth Davis has a book, Don't Know Much About a Lot of Things, and has a lot of different topics. And he asks, well, don't know much about Easter. Jelly beans, chocolate eggs, marshmallow bunnies. Easter is an important religious holiday that, like Christmas, has grown increasingly secular and commercial. But around the world, Christians celebrate their belief in the resurrection of Jesus in a very similar way, with painted eggs and baskets. What do you know about the most significant day on the Christian calendar? Well, let's see. True or false? With their answers. We'll put this out there. The date of Easter moves each year to coincide with the Jewish Passover. True or false? False. Early Christians tied Easter to Passover, but for Western Christians, it's now the first Sunday after the first full moon on or after the vernal equinox. The Orthodox use a calculation based on the Julian calendar, Pope Julius. Two, in Greece, Easter eggs are red. True. The red is for Jesus' blood. Three, Teddy Roosevelt began the White House Easter egg roll tradition with his children. False. Rutherford Hayes and his wife Lucy hosted the first White House egg roll in 1878. Finally, four, the hot cross buns traditionally served on Good Friday are a British invention. False. As popular as the buns are in Britain, they apparently date to pre-Christian times when the god Zeus, that's a Greek god, Zeus, was offered a bun with a cross that represented the horns of an ox. So everything goes back to Greek mythology. Kind of interesting. Well, we'll talk about some eggs and so forth, and because there's some stories about eggs, but we will get back to that. Interesting, since we're saying goodbye to March, a little essay from Jack Spadafora, a very talented writer who comes from Park Ridge, an editorialist from the Chicago Tribune, entitles his essay, Marching to the Beat of a New Month. And this new month that we are saying goodbye to is March. A funny month by all calculations, for it teeters on the cusp of winter and spring without really being either. And so March in Chicago is a month in search of an identity. Its identity is partly defined by the fact, I estimate, there are so many March birthdays, because March is 9 gestational months after so many June weddings. There you have it. But obviously, there is more to March than Pisces children. March is an outside-inside time of year, with each a revelation. Outside, the operative word is more. More birds, more sunshine, more warmth, more stirrings in our gardens, more laughter from our children. After all, ever since the day after Christmas, few of us have found any legitimate reason for snow to stay, which we never got anyway. Everything and everyone is now in an emerging state of expectancy. Inside, the operative word is when. When can we clean these windows of their cloudy layers of winter? When can we store these bulky boots and coats? When can we smell grass and lilacs and earth again? After all, we were not created to hibernate inside houses staring at imbecilic reality shows. There are precisely 744 hours to our march, and they stand there on the altar of time as a tabernacle of opportunity. Each worshiper must elect the best way to consume them. The choice largely has to do with how many marches we've lived. Youth is a gift of nature. Age is a work of art. So it is both logical and likely we will worship the opportunity of our marches differently. The young among us feel, like sap in the trees, a swelling energy to go, to do, to be. Young men pulse with the itch to find an open golf course, a clean playing field, a stretch of road, a beautiful woman. Young women have subtler itches, including a new look, a fresh challenge, more time with neighbors, a gentle man. The aged among us are hardly as old and dried as the young might think. Sap is flowing here, too, only it finds expression in quieter, more introspective ways, for, after all, they have already done what youth still searches to do. So March becomes a minor key reprise of themes already played and savored. Who has the best of this outside-inside month? Well, that's the wrong question. Both young and old have been granted the same gift of time. How we spend it is largely a matter of how much of it we have left to spend. Very thoughtful words by Jack Spadafora from Park Ridge. Youth is a gift of nature. Age is a work of art. The aged among us are hardly as old and dried as the young might think. Sap is flowing here, too, only if it finds expression in quieter, more introspective ways. For after all, they have already done what youth still searches to do. Very interesting. And how we spend it is largely a matter of how much of it we have left to spend. Well, we can spend it, just like the pebbles in the jar that we talk about in the summer at the beginning of the summer months. How we choose to use them is up to us. And hope we choose to use them well. We're going to play a little music from Chris Bodie. We've had Chris on the show many times. Very talented man. He has a CD entitled Italian, I thought, as my studio producer Josh mentioned, in honor of our new Pope. Although he's not Italian. He's Argentinian. But he's in Italy. We know that much. We'll play some excerpts, some selections from his CD. First off, The Very Thought of You, sung with Paula Cole. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Thank you. Beautiful song by Chris Botti, The Very Thought of You. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Well, we'll talk about the eggs. Let's continue our thoughts on Easter. Easter eggs. Of all the symbols associated with the Easter holiday, the egg, the symbol of fertility and new life, is the most identifiable. The customs and traditions of using eggs have been associated with Easter for centuries. Originally, Easter eggs were painted with bright colors to represent the sunlight of spring and were used in Easter egg rolling contests or given as gifts. After they were colored and etched with various designs, the eggs were exchanged by lovers and romantic admirers, much the same as Valentine's. In medieval time, eggs were traditionally given at Easter to the servants. In Germany, eggs were given to children along with other Easter gifts. Maybe the most famous egg rolling takes place on the White House lawn. And in Germany and other countries, eggs used for cooking were not broken, but the contents were removed by piercing the end of each egg with a needle and blowing the contents into a bowl. The hollow eggs were dyed and hung from shrubs and trees during the Easter week. I remember seeing as a child some of the Eastern European friends my parents had. There's nothing in the egg. I wonder what was in the egg, but that's how they did that. And they direct decorated them beautifully. They were just gorgeous. Easter egg games. Eggs played an important part in Easter sports. The Romans celebrated the Easter season by running races on an oval track and giving eggs as prizes. Two traditional Easter egg games are the Easter egg hunt and the Easter egg roll. On Easter morning, the children of the house join in a search to locate the eggs that the Easter bunny had hidden while they were asleep. The searching might continue throughout the house, with the older children helping the youngest. Sometimes prizes of candy are awaiting the child finding the most eggs. And sometimes the eggs aren't found till about June. And they're very ripe by then. The rules of an Easter egg roll are to see who can roll an egg the greatest distance or can make the roll without breaking it, usually down a grassy hillside or slope. And Kenneth Davis again asks the question, don't know much about eggs. Whether the chicken or egg came first, May is National Egg Month. However you like yours, recent research has put eggs back in the American menu. Most experts now say an egg a day is okay for most healthy people. So, which did come first? Well, we're not sure, but here's a quiz again from Kenneth Davis. The color of the egg, Josh is ready for this. The color of the egg depends on the color of the hen that laid it. True. You've got none of these right, actually, Jeff. Generally, but not always, white eggs are laid by hens with white feathers and white earlobes. Chickens had ears, I don't know. Or lips, I don't know. Brown eggs by hens with red feathers and red earlobes. There you go. Two, a hen lays an egg every third day. Wrong. A hen lays an egg a day. Christopher Columbus introduced chickens to the Americas. True. There you go. You got one right. Although there may have been chickens in the New World long ago, there were none when Columbus landed. On the vernal equinox, an egg can stand upright without toppling. True. But no more than on any other day. They can also always do that. Balancing an egg on end is difficult but doable. Finally, Eggs Benedict is named for the Revolutionary War traitor Benedict Arnold. Eggs Benedict. False. The dish's history is muddled, but it definitely doesn't involve Arnold. That's true. So, some interesting facts and factotum. Truth and lies about Easter, and certainly a day to celebrate. Everybody's out today. Hopefully it's nice and warm and not rainy, certainly not snowy. Maybe we're done with the snow. One thinks that might be the case. But one never knows, right? Let's continue with our CD from Chris Botti, the great song written by Jerome Kern, The Way You Look Tonight. We'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show. Chris Bodie, the way you look tonight, we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Broadway in Chicago is thrilled to announce Catch Me If You Can, based on the hit DreamWorks film and the incredible true story that inspired it. The first national tour of the high-flying Broadway musical, Catch Me If You Can, will land in Chicago at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randall, for a limited engagement April 2nd through the 14th. Catch Me If You Can captures the astonishing true story of Frank Abagnale Jr., a world-class con artist who passed himself off as a doctor, a lawyer, and a jet pilot, all before the age of 21. With straight-arrow FBI agent Carl Hanratty on Frank's trail, we're off on a jet-setting cat-and-mouse chase as a jazzy, swinging 60s score keeps this adventure in constant motion. In the end, Agent Hanratty learns he and Frank aren't so very different after all, and Frank finds out what happens when love catches up to a man on the run. Catch Me If You Can is based on Frank Abagnale's New York Times bestselling autobiography published by Broadway Paperbacks and the hit 2002 film of the same name directed by Steven Spielberg with screenplay by Jeff Nathanson and a book by Frank Abagnale Jr. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning actress who has appeared in such musical hits as Chicago, Legally Blonde, Forbidden Broadway, and Hairspray, accomplished vocalist in the genres of pop, jazz, blues, classical, and country, dancer, writer, proud graduate of Iowa State University, who came pretty close last week in the NCAAs, and now starring in Chicago's newest hit musical, Catch Me If You Can, at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph, April 2nd through the 14th, Amy Bergmeyer. Amy, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Well, it's great to have you, kiddo, and we're looking for you to come to Chicago and have a great time with a great new musical here.
Yes, I cannot be more excited. I've been looking forward to Chicago for the full tour now.
Well, you've been to Chicago before. We were talking a little earlier, and this is a new musical, and the movie was terrific. Everybody enjoyed it, of course, with Leonard Caprio and Tom Hanks. Tell us a little bit about the story as it relates to the musical on stage.
All right. Well, it's very similar. Of course, we add music and dancing to it and a lot of showgirls. But it's based on Frank Abagnale Jr.'s real-life story as he was a con artist when he was younger. I think he was between 16, 17, 18 years old when he impersonated pilots and lawyers and doctors, and the list goes on. And he pulled it off, and he got away with it for quite some time. And then the FBI agents and such caught up with him eventually, and he paid his time. And now he works for the FBI, and he's worked for the FBI for 35 years. We've actually got the chance to meet Frank a couple times. He's visited us in some of the theaters that we've gone to, and he is an amazing individual. And, you know, his story, it really is something how he did all of that, and he did pay his dues, like I said, and now he's on the path to good, and he is an amazing individual.
Well, he did it at such a young age. Did anybody ask the question, how'd you do that?
Yeah. Well, as he tells his story, he did look older for his age, and he was able to alter his identification, his driver's license. Mm-hmm. When he ran away from home, I think he was 16, and he automatically added 10 years to that. It was easy to change back in the time then. And he just, he wore clothing, you know, like business suits and things like that, which would make people think that he was older. And he just carried himself that way, and people believed him.
All a matter of perception, right?
Yeah, exactly. And our musical kind of goes along with that. And you can see Stephen Anthony plays the role of Frank Abagnale Jr. in our musical. And he's, I think he's 23 years old. Hmm. I could be wrong on that, but he's a young-looking man, and he does an amazing job with this role. I can't even tell you how his voice is just out of this world.
And no, there's a seriousness about the story too, Amy. It deals with family and childhood and divorce, because both Carl and Frank experienced both of those, broken homes, troubled childhoods, and so forth. And we see that there is a great deal of similarity down deep between Carl and Frank.
Yeah, that's right. And when we've spoken with Frank, he does talk about that a lot, how although he had all this money and glamour with this life, he had a very lonely life. He was never able to hang with people his own age once he ran away from home. And once he was on the run, so to speak, He was not able to ever meet his dad again. His dad ended up passing away while he was gone. So that is very, very sad. And, you know, and ultimately he did what he did basically in hopes of getting his parents back together. If you think about it like that, because he was very, he wanted his mom and dad to get back together, and it just never happened.
Well, he might have had a lonely life, but it was certainly exciting, if nothing else.
I know.
And, of course, exactly. what a great group of people. Terrence McNally, of course, who involved in the book with Full Monty and Ragtime, and Mark Shaman, Scott Whitman, who did Hairspray, and Jerry Mitchell, choreography from Legally Blonde and Hairspray. What a great group of people. Must be a great opportunity to work with such talented people.
Oh, my gosh. It was so amazing. And Jack O'Brien, he would speak with us in our rehearsal process, and it really has been a dream come true to work with these people. And, oh, wow.
How did you happen to get the role, Amy?
You know, well, I'm from Iowa.
Right.
I actually worked on the corporate side of this business for my career prior to this in Des Moines. And I, about 2 years ago, decided to move to New York and sort of just throw all my eggs in that one basket. And I just started auditioning full time. And I actually landed a role at the John Angerman Theater in the production of Hairspray, which I mentioned, that same, you know, direction team. They were involved with that. And although this was a regional gig, it was a very well-known theater, and it put me on the map, so to speak. And when the casting came around for Catch Me If You Can, some of the people involved with casting were familiar with my work. And because I had worked with Hairspray, as a lot of the other people in my cast did, actually, in different productions of Hairspray, they basically called me in for my first audition, which was such a blessing, because then I didn't have to go through the whole entire process like I normally would.
Sure.
Sometimes the casting process can be exceptionally long. I think I probably had, after that first initial audition, I probably had 3 or 4 callbacks. With other people where they were comparing me, reading with different people and singing songs. I play the role of Carol Strong in this movie, or I'm sorry, in this musical. And Frank Abagnale Jr. falls in love with this gal, Brenda,
whom
is one of the leading ladies in the show, and I play her mom in this. And I'm sort of the comic relief southern housewife, if you will. But in addition to that principal role, I play 7 other character roles.
Really?
Of all shapes and sizes.
Whoa, you got a busy time on the stage there.
Yeah, exactly. I wear different wigs and costumes, and sometimes my own family doesn't even recognize me.
Well, as we were talking earlier, and of course, being from Iowa, a lot of those family members become visiting you here in Chicago.
Yes, that's one of the most exciting things for me, is when you know people in the audience are there to watch you in particular. It is such a special feeling. And you know, the theater that we're going to be in Chicago is just, oh, it's just gorgeous. It really is going to be a dream come true being there.
Yeah, the Cadillac's a great place, and they're going to have a Bergmeier section for you just there for all your people.
Yeah.
Well, did you always wanted to act? You had a little bug in you since you were young?
I sure did.
Yeah?
Yeah, I grew up on a farm in southwest Iowa.
Oh, really? Okay.
With really no other necessarily talented people, I guess you could say. And I remember being outside on my swing singing. I've always been a singer. I just love singing. I didn't have much of a dance background until I got to New York 2 years ago and started studying with some people there. It has always been something deep inside of me. As you mentioned, I went to Iowa State University for one of my degrees, or 2 of my degrees, actually.
And we're sorry what happened last week, too.
Yeah.
I know.
You can't win them all. But I actually have degrees in design, in advertising, and I have a master's degree in journalism, all of which are not musical theater.
Right.
And people are like, how did this all work out? Well, you know, the threads of your life, and I say you just follow your hearts, and it will lead you in a certain direction, and that's what's happened with me.
Well, with a degree in journalism, you might be able to write a musical about a young woman who grows up in southwest Iowa and makes it big on Broadway.
Yeah. I hope that comes true. Please. I hope that comes true.
Now, since you've been in New York and so forth and around the United States performing, who are some of the performers you've looked up to, kind of to emulate, or that you'd like to pattern your way that you perform after?
Well, there are so many. Yeah. Well, the gal that played my role on Broadway, her name is Linda Hart,
mm-hmm.
and she has definitely been somebody I've looked to for inspiration. She actually came out to our venue that we were in at the Pantages in L.A. Last week and the week before, so I got to see her again. I really like Kristen Chenoweth. I do have a lot of different voices inside of me, singing voices. So it, like my heroes are sort of all over the place. I love Martina McBride from the country music world,
mm-hmm.
Which that sort of goes towards the role that I play in this because she's a Southern housewife. There's sort of a country twang to that song. Oh gosh, there's so many. Megan Mullally, I love her from Will and Grace. She's done some stuff on Broadway. Those are probably my favorite people that I look to. Sutton Foster, Idina Menzel.
You mentioned two people from Wicked, of course. You have a little Elphaba or Galinda in, you think?
You know, I love Wicked so much. Someday I would love to be in that show. I'm sort of not either of those characters, though. I'm somewhere in between, so I don't think I would ever get to play that role or the other role, but who knows?
I had a friend of mine call me this week, and Wicked is now in Milwaukee. It's going to be in Milwaukee here the next couple months or so. He says, do you think it's worthwhile to see Wicked? I said, run and get tickets.
Yeah, it is a great production. Oh, man.
And if you're in Chicago, run and get tickets to Catch Me If You Can. Nominated for 4 Tony Awards and 6 Drama Desk Awards, Catch Me If You Can features a Tony Award-winning creative team with a book by Terrence McNally, an irresistible score by Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman, choreography by Jerry Mitchell, and direction by Jack O'Brien. Broadway in Chicago is thrilled to announce Catch Me If You Can, based on the hit DreamWorks film and the incredible true story that inspired it. The first national tour of the high-flying Broadway musical Catch Me If You Can will land in Chicago at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph, for a limited engagement April 2nd through the 14th. And on the line with us right now, one of the stars of Catch Me If You Can, Amy Bergmeier. Amy, I'm going to give a phone number for the theater, 800-775-2000 for tickets. Delightful chatting with you, Amy. It really is.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Safe travels coming in here to Chicago, and we're going to see you for the press opening, and happy Easter to you and your family.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks, Amy. Amy Bergmeier, one of the stars from Catch Me If You Can. Looking forward to that. The movie was terrific, of course, directed by Steven Spielberg, and the musical here sounds like kind of interesting. What a delightful lady to talk with, Amy, and certainly I'm sure she's going to bring a lot of energy to the to her performance. And again, at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph, April 2nd through the 14th, for tickets, 800-775-2000. Continuing our Easter theme, a little funny story comes from Matt Harvey. 3 men died and are awaiting judgment. St. Peter tells them that to get into heaven, each must describe the meaning of Easter. Well, the first man says, every Easter we celebrate the birth of the baby Jesus. We decorate an Easter tree, sing Easter carols, hang Easter stockings, send Easter cards. He's cut off as St. Peter, scowling, presses a button and dispatches him to the nether regions. Well, next man, looking at that nervously, says, to commemorate Easter, the Chicago River is painted green, festive Easter corned beef and cabbage is consumed, and green Easter beer is drunk. His speech is interrupted as he, too, is projected down to the pit. This leaves the third man, who is smiling kind of confidently, says, on Good Friday, the Romans crucified our Lord Jesus Christ, the man begins. He appeared to be dead, and his followers, deeply saddened, took him to a cave, placed his body in the cave, and rolled a giant rock in the entrance. Very good, says St. Peter, encouragingly. His followers kept a vigil for 2 days and nights in front of the cave, says a third man, growing in confidence. On Easter Sunday, they were amazed to see the stone roll away, and there was Jesus, alive. He came out of the cave. Excellent, says St. Peter, reaching for the key to heaven. Yes, said the man, continuing. Jesus came out of the cave, looked around, saw his shadow, which meant 6 more weeks of winter. You know where he ended up. All I need to know about life, I learned from the Easter Bunny. And what are some of those things? Well, don't put all your eggs in one basket. walk softly, and carry a big carrot. Everyone needs a friend who is all ears. There's no such thing as too much candy. A cute little tail attracts a lot of attention. Everyone is entitled to a bad hair day. Some body parts should be floppy. Good things come in small, sugar-coated packages. An Easter bonnet can tame even the wildest hair. To show your true colors, you have to come out of your shell. The best things in life are still sweet and gooey. And finally, let your happy thoughts multiply like rabbits. Some thoughts from the Easter Bunny. I'm going to get back to Chris Botti's CD, Italia. Great aria from the Puccini opera Turandot, entitled Nessun Dorma, which is translated as Let No One Sleep. If someone would ask me, what is the quintessential opera song that you would like to listen to be introduced to opera? This would be my suggestion, because I think it's a very powerful song. So, as played by Chris Botti, Nessun Dorma. Thank you. Wasn't it beautiful? From the great Giacomo Puccini's opera Turandot, Nessun Dorma. I always enjoy talking with our next very special guest. He and I have been friends for many years. The quest for simplicity and authenticity in Vollari's cooking is defined by a need to shape a distinctive cuisine, acknowledge Vollari's roots, attend to the comfort and hospitality of guests, and search out the highest quality ingredients. The objective is to highlight the intrinsic flavors of those ingredients, and this exploration humbly expresses a love of the land's bounty, simplicity, elegance, and freshness for the pleasure of your palate. Established in 1997, Vollari reflects the look and feel of an old-world Italian restaurant. The food represents the finest traditional Italian cuisine with modern accents. At Vollari, we are very proud of our simple presentations, accentuating the very best Italian food in the Chicagoland area. Outside seating, valet parking, delivery, takeout, and catering are available. And on the line with me right now is the businessman, entrepreneur, award-winning restaurateur, leader in the hospitality industry in Chicagoland, wine connoisseur, congenial host, and one of the brightest stars in Chicago's restaurant world, now celebrating the Easter season at Vollari East and West, our good pal, Mr. Benny Sidhu. Benny, how you doing, my pal?
Good, Kevin. Wow. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Certainly, happy Easter season to you and your family. And we had a delightful dinner. We were watching the NCAAs a week ago, and things were terrific, and the place was packed as it always is, Ben.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kevin. Yeah, we keep trying, and, you know, after 16 years and 5 years in Oak Brook Terrace, what a ride it's been. It's been a phenomenal ride.
Well, and it continues because of the quality, as I said in the introduction, that you provide for your guests and so forth, the great people like Marco who work with you, the welcoming atmosphere of the people in your staff, the great cooking of Massimo and the people in the kitchen. It's put it all together. You have a great place.
Thank you. Yeah, we duplicated in Oak Brook Terrace, too. We have a great chef out west, too, Doug DeVico, that just joined us about 8 months ago, and he's doing a phenomenal job out here, too, with a beautiful patio that we are getting ready with this weather.
Well, hopefully, right? Well, hopefully we're done with the snow. I don't know.
Still a little bit of snow outside. Very little, though.
You know, it's hard to do it once, Ben, and now you've done it twice with Vollari West. What motivates you? Where's the energy come from, Ben?
You know, Kevin, I've been doing this for over 40 years.
Right.
And I love the fact of the challenge and the pleasure of satisfying people with a great product and a consistent product. And it just drives me every day even more and more and more to get better on a daily basis. And I love every bit of it. I do it with passion. I just... my heart is in it every single day and every hour of the day.
Well, you know, and it shows not only what you do, because you're working hard every day in both Vollari East and Vollari West, but in the people that I said before work for you, because they see how hard you're working, they see the enthusiasm, the energy, and the love and the passion for what you do, Ben. And you know what? It's very infectious, and they feel the same way.
I agree. Thank you so much. That's a great compliment. And I believe in that too, Kevin. I have phenomenal staff, and they see me, the drive that I have, and everybody kind of just follows me around, and they do a great job for me. I have a phenomenal staff all the way around.
You know, you and I have been friends for many, many years from many different restaurants, and now that you have your own, do you see things in other restaurants? I'm sure you visit other restaurants. You see how people present their food, present their restaurants and so forth, and you like some of the stuff and like others?
Absolutely. We go out a lot and do a lot of research, what everybody else is doing, and we try to stay with times. I always tell everybody that we need to stay with times. That's why I go out and do research of what everybody else is doing. And then you have to stay competitive. And like I said, after 16 years downtown and 6 years out west, it's not easy, but, you know, like we said, if you stay focused on and you believe on what you're doing by putting a great product and give great hospitality to the customer, which is also very important, extremely important. And we just follow the footsteps that everybody else is trying to achieve, too, because there's some great restaurants around the area in the Chicagoland area, and which always stay very competitive. For us to have stayed this long in the business and staying consistent and stay strong in the business that we do, sometimes I get amazed myself. I say, wow, we are very lucky.
Yeah, very remarkable. What are you doing different today, Ben, than you did 10 years ago, and what are you going to be doing differently 5 or 10 years from now? Where do you see the restaurant industry or business going?
The restaurant industry is going to a completely to another level. As you've seen yourself, Kevin, because I know you're an entrepreneur yourself, going out is becoming extremely competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to stay with times. And we make adjustments every season according to the market and according to what people are asking. People have, in general, are very knowledgeable of food, very knowledgeable of wine. And we keep updating our wine list. We keep updating the menus. For the reason, I think we are able to stay strong in the market.
And economics is a part of things. People don't want to go to restaurants, and the cheapest wine in the restaurant menu is $100. People can't afford that anymore. It's ridiculous, you know?
No, no. That's one of the things we have. Like in Oakbrook Terrace, I just changed the lunch menu. We have a phenomenal lunch menu. Average entrees ranges from $8 to $12. People are watching everything
right.
they spend, the way the economy is.
Right.
So we get that same type of clientele, and they're very cautious of what they spend.
Right.
And we have to make those adjustments as we go along.
There's room for all different types of restaurants, whether they're ethnic cuisine, French or German or Polish or whatever, American restaurants. And Italian restaurants have always been very popular. People always gravitate back to that kind of home-filled, warm cuisine, the same cuisine that you had when you grew up, that my grandmother and grandfather had when I was growing up. There's something in Italian cuisine that makes you feel like you're back home.
Absolutely. And going back to the conversation of you know, what you do as you go along with times, and in the last few years and in the future, I see a lot of the traditional old-fashioned cooking coming back around, especially in the Italian and in the Italian restaurants. They love the fact of having the, they call it the Sunday gravy, the meatball.
Gravy, right.
You know, all that kind of stuff. And it, believe it or not, at one time we were all looking at this place, you know, yes, presentation is very important,
right.
too, but also quality and staying focused on trying to do a lot of traditional dishes like mom used to make.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have a certain purveyors that come back and you can rely upon, you can trust? Some people try and you don't get what the quality that you want and you have to go to someone else.
Correct. We have great relationships with the various purveyors that we deal with. Sometimes, unfortunately, if we don't get the consistency that we look for, we make changes immediately because we like to have consistency on the product. And the purveyors know you, been around for a while. They know what you're asking for. And the delivery is always 99% of the time is right, what they send us. And if we see that, you know, they are going a different direction, we'll jump on it right away. And we make the changes as we need to do.
What's the best part of your job, Ben, and what's the worst part of your job? Can't always be good.
The best part of my job, I just love coming in every day and mm-hmm. welcoming people to the restaurant. And when you see your restaurant that is full, what a great satisfaction of I've worked all day and night. And you look around and says, wow, they didn't come for me. But they came for the quality product that we are serving. The worst part of my job is that I don't spend too much time with my kids.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, right.
And I know I pay the price for that, but I have a beautiful family that I enjoy every day and a wonderful understanding wife and understanding kids. So.
What are some of your favorite foods? Of course, I know some of my favorite foods at Villari. Of course, I like, you know, the great veal limone that you have and the great appetizers you have. It's such a diverse, whether they're warm or cold appetizers, they're always terrific. Jesus does a great job. We always like Jesus taking care of us over there.
Gentleman. He's been with me for 20 years.
Right.
The restaurants too. Myself, I love everything. You know, I love to eat, and I watch what I eat. And, of course, I'm a pasta eater. I love pasta. I was raised with that. And we do some great dishes of pasta. And a lot of times I think I overdo it a little bit. But I also enjoy meat. And mm-hmm. I'm owning a steakhouse, too. Now I have understood much better what meat is all about, too. And we serve a quality product at the Italian restaurants, too. We do prime-aged meat, Volare, too. And I do enjoy a nice piece of meat once in a while.
Well, our guest the other day, we have to tell you, Ben, we have a complaint here.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. We ate too much.
Yeah, that's the problem of Larry all the time. And that's why I refuse to sit down sometimes.
But it's a great problem they have because it's always fun to be out there. And certainly, as I said, whether you're sitting near or at the bar or you're sitting in the dining room with some guests, it's just a fun place to be.
Right. Thank you so much.
Of course, Volare West and Volare Downtown. Of course, downtown, you did the expansion and kind of flipped the restaurant to give us – it was always crowded. Now it's even crowded twice the size.
I couldn't believe it. I am. It's amazing. Amazing. It came out really nice, and it's phenomenal. It's been a great ride.
You know, it's been fun. It's always a joy to chat with you, my pal. It's always a joy to come out to your restaurants and to be with you and to be with all your great people. And, you know, if there's anything we can do to get the word out, we're always here for you.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I'm honored to be on with your show. Are you kidding? I appreciate it.
Simplifying and eliminating the unnecessary so that the necessary may speak is the guiding principle behind Benny's Chop House and his Volare's, East and West. Unprecedented cuisine begins by starting with the highest quality ingredients from exceedingly specialized producers across the world. Once the ingredients descend upon the Volare kitchens, it is the ideal combination of time-honored techniques married with modern methods that allows to highlight, the showcase the core value and flavor of an ingredient. Of course, on the line with us right now is the owner of the Volare's and Benny's Chop House, our good pal Benny Sadu. Benny, I'm going to let you give some websites and phone numbers so people can get some information.
Yes, Volare Restaurant at AOL.com. Benny's Chop House at AOL.com.
And the phone number out at downtown is?
Downtown is 312-410-9900. Volare West is 630-495-0200.
Always a pleasure, my pal.
Brunch coming up too, so.
Always a pleasure, and I certainly wish you and your family a happy Easter, and you're a dear, dear friend, and I always look forward to seeing you the next time.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I appreciate it. You and your family, too. Have a great Easter.
God bless you, my pal.
Thank you. You too, my friend. Bye-bye.
Benny Sadu, one of the great restaurateurs in Chicago. Of course, Benny's Chop House and the Volare's East and West. I'm going to give the phone number again for Chicago's Volare, 312-626-6446. In Oakbrook, 630-495-0200. And as Benny said, great lunch out in Oakbrook. And take advantage of that. Very reasonably priced. Great place to go, great place to spend a little time with friends, and the food is, I know I mentioned it, I'll be redundant, but just absolutely scrumptious. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guests, Amy Bergmeyer, now starring in Catch Me If You Can, the great new musical of the movie at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph, April 2nd through the 14th. For tickets and information, 800-775-2000. Delightful chatting with Amy from Southwest Iowa to New York, Broadway, and Chicago. And our good pal, Benny Sadu, the owner and proprietor of three of the great restaurants in Chicago, Volare in Chicago, Volare West in Oakbrook, and, of course, Benny's Chop House, celebrating the Easter season and any other kind of celebration that you'd like to have. In Chicago, the number is 312-626-6446. In Oakbrook, it's 630-495-0200. Benny's been a good pal for a long time. You're going to have a great time at Benny's restaurants. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day and happy Easter.
I feel for you, it's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. in your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, then a luck, then I suppose.